In the summer of 2009, students from the Philadelphia Student Union and other organizing groups from Philadelphia took a trip to West Virginia. There, they attended a leadership institute with groups from the U.S. and abroad that are working to end poverty. At the leadership institute, the groups attended workshops and took trips to observe how the coal industry affected the people of West Virginia. On one of the trips, they met with Wes Harris, who is a local historian and a former coal miner. Wes Harris gave a tour of Matewan, West Virginia, the site of previous mine worker strikes that took place in the 1920s. There, he explained the conditions of coal minings before they were unionized.
In 1905, okay, and as a general rule of thumb, about 1905, everything north of the Kanawha River was largely United Mine Worker coal. It was union coal. Everything south were non-union. This is an American silver dollar. A union miner got paid that, all right? Almost 7/10 of an ounce of real silver. Good anywhere in the world. If you were south of the river, this is a piece of scrip. It's a piece of tin with a hole in it. Good only at the company store. That's what they got paid.
Workers were paid with coins called scrips that could be used at the company store. At the company store, products were more expensive as opposed to a regular store. When miners were not able to afford food or clothes at the company store, they would charge it on credit that could only be paid off by working more. Purchases led to debt. Debt led to more working as well as more purchases. It created a cycle that led to a system of slavery. Because if workers stopped working, then the result would be debt.
The whole story that we would tell you today can be understood right here. When the railroads came into southern West Virginia, into these mountains, that meant the slave coal could now be shipped north to Pittsburgh to compete with the union coal. The union has to either move south or die, because the northern operators basically said, well, why would we pay you real money when we could pay those guys down there a piece of tin, okay?
Mine workers north of the Kanawha River knew they would lose their jobs if they did not help the workers south of the Kanawha River to unionize.
That's what the whole fight. You hear about the mine wars?
Yeah.
I don't talk about the mine wars anymore. We used to do that. Put this in your brain. It's the West Virginia Mine War, 1890 to the present. We have a lot of battles, but it's one war, and it goes on today, and today we're in what I call the ethnic cleansing phase. Appalachians are no longer needed, and we're being run out of our homeland. That's what's happening here.
Workers attempting to unionize had many difficulties. On a map, Wes Harris showed the only two towns not owned by the coal companies.
And down here at Esdale, this other circle on Cabin Creek, were the only two non-company towns. So that meant if you lived anywhere else, if you got evicted for joining the union, you had to go to Holly Grove or Paint Creek and pitch a tent to live. You got evicted from your company house 5 minutes after they found out you were in the union. On Cabin Creek, they'd say, hit the creek. That meant we own the land on either side. Get your feet in that water and walk. Company town, the company owned the houses, the school, the churches, and all that. They had what was called a shack rouster. The shack rouster would go along at 5 o'clock in the morning if there's no light in your house. He'd beat on the door to get up and go to work. If you didn't get up, the shack rouster had a key. He went into your house, kicked you out of bed. You said, I'm sick. The shack rouster said, let's take you to company doctor. The company doctor said, well, you didn't have any trouble walking here to see me. You go back to work.
The struggle of the coal workers remains unknown to many.
The scrip system would go on as late as 1970. We still had scrip being used in West Virginia. It was essentially gutted or diluted by the end of the 1940s. And there had been some court decisions that said the coal companies had to be willing to trade scrip for real money. Here in West Virginia, we had over 500 separate kinds of money. Now, if you go to our new state museum, a $17 million one up in Charleston, they make out like scrip was a favor. I have yet to interview a single descendant or a single worker from those times who thought scrip was anything but bad. So it was simply a way of control, a mechanism of control.
The coal workers' fight to unionize was long and hard and still continues today.
Statistically speaking, we could reduce by 70% all coal mine fatalities tomorrow morning without spending a dime. All we would have to do is make every mine in this country union.
The struggle of the coal miners and their fight relates a lot to what's going on in Philadelphia with students. The way the coal companies operated allowed the workers very few options. It maintained a system so that companies remained in control and the workers had no choice but to comply. Take the scripts, for example. They were a worthless piece of currency used to assure that workers would need credit in order to purchase necessities, which would lead to debt, which would keep workers powerless and out of control. The system is in some ways very similar to the Philadelphia School District. By not supplying students with necessary resources to succeed in school, such as books and qualified teachers, this prevents students from excelling to their full potential. But like the coal miners, students also form unions to stand together and be stronger to fight for rights. For instance, we, the Philadelphia Student Union, fight for equal education for our students in both magnet and neighborhood schools. I'm Kimora Lamott, and I produced this segment, and it was edited by Matthew Johnson. For On Blast of the Philadelphia Student Union.